Slugger Rafael Palmeiro has served the 10-day suspension handed down by Major League Baseball for steroids and returns to the Baltimore Orioles tonight, one day after the return of Kenny Rogers of the Texas Rangers. An arbitrator trimmed Rogers' 20-game suspension for shoving two TV cameramen to 13 games. Our baseball pal Alan Schwartz joins us now on the phone from New York. He's a senior writer for Baseball America and writes for the Sunday New York Times sports section as well. Alan, always nice to have you on the program.
Well, good to be here, Neil.
And, of course, we'd like listeners to weigh in as well. What do you think of baseball suspension policies? Too harsh? Too lax? Is Palmeiro still one of baseball's greats? How would these players be handled if they were competing in other sports? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and the email address is TOTN@NPR.org. And Alan, let's begin with Rafael Palmeiro. We're told by news reports that he will be in the dugout at Baltimore's Camden Yards tonight, but not in the lineup, and his agents say he will have nothing to say about his suspension.
Well, and I think that's not unreasonable, given the ongoing legalities that he has to deal with. I mean, people forget, of course, he's violated federal law by this. Now, of course, I'm sure that he's not going to exactly be brought up on charges, but there is a lot of things going on right now in real time that he has to be careful with. And just because some baseball writers want to talk to him about what it's like to come back, you know, gee, he's allowed to say no comment, thank you very much, and go about his business.
Yet he, before his suspension began, issued a statement that, left a lot of questions unanswered.
Oh, it certainly did, but that's his prerogative. I mean, I think that a lot of things still need to be looked into in all this, but one thing that I want to point out is everyone has brought up, why did it take so long for Rafael Palmeiro's suspension to become, or to be suspended and for him to be publicly identified? And the union and Major League Baseball have both said that it took a while, perhaps longer than other people would like, for the checks and balances to run their course, for the appeals process to run its course. And people are now second-guessing that, saying it took too long. Well, who's to say that there haven't or won't be times where that process actually identifies a false positive and someone is spared the public retribution that people are now exacting on Rafael Palmeiro when, in fact, he did not deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that we have to be a little careful in hindsight, looking back at the process, when the process is really what protects us.
One of the things, we reporters are trained to ask is the question, qui bono, who benefits? The long time that it took baseball to come to this determination allowed the All-Star game to go on without, problems with steroids and allowed Rafael Palmeiro to collect his 3,000th hit cheers of all of his fans.
Well, of course it did, but more importantly, above anything else, theoretically, it also protected all players from a false positive that would otherwise have stained them forever. So I think that there are some higher callings here, and those are the issues of fairness and the issues of justice. We can all now say that Rafael Palmeiro and other players don't deserve justice, but I think that that's a little sanctimonious at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the process is very important, and I mean, I'm not happy about what happened, of course, but I think we have to realize that there are hidden benefits to it that we often ignore.
One other point. In his statement, he at least suggested that this substance, whatever it may have been, he didn't identify it, got into his body. He wasn't sure how, but he suggested it may have come in because he'd taken some supplement in it, and it might have been a part of that. At least that was the conclusion that a lot of people reached. Then there was an apparent leak from somebody in Major League Baseball, or at least in the testing program, to the New York Times that identified the substance as a steroid that doesn't show up in any supplements like that. I mean, there are a couple of things here, one of which, this leak, this is being protested by Palmeiro's representatives and by the union as saying, look, there's supposed to be a confidentiality agreement here. You're not supposed to leak this stuff.
No, of course they're not supposed to leak this stuff, but people do leak things. I mean, people shouldn't have leaked, the government presumably should not have leaked the grand jury testimony from the Balco hearings in San Francisco to the Chronicle, but they did, and Jason Giambi should not have had his alleged, and I use that word very carefully, testimony made public, but someone did. I mean, confidentiality is a pretty tough road to hoe in this age of instant news and constant real time communication, similarly. The test results from the Major League Baseball drug testing plan in 2003 and 2004, or I might be getting the years wrong here,
mm-hmm.
should not have been allowed to get into the hands of the government when it was investigating Balco, but it did. I think that confidentiality is a wonderful goal, but to think that it will always take place, I think, is incredibly unrealistic.
Well, let's get some listeners involved in the conversation. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join us. And we'll begin with David. David in Liberty, Missouri.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just think that really, as far as baseball is concerned, this is almost a joke, because it seems like in the other sports, and in fact, I think it was on your morning program yesterday, Frank DeFord came up and made a thing to a bicyclist that's basically being, you know, railroaded because he was found to be...
blood doping, yeah.
Yeah, blood doping. And it just seems like every other sport, the local team here, the Kansas City Chiefs football team, one of our safeties was busted for DWIs. He's going to miss the first four games of the season. I mean, they may cost us a chance at the playoffs. And here, Palmeiro, I mean, without a doubt, you know, this is it. And come to find out, you know, if you look into it, at least what's being on, you know, in other sports publications, it sounds like Major League Baseball set on some of this stuff. So not to hurt the MVP induction of Boggs and I can't remember whoever else, but
Ryne Sandberg.
Yeah, and set on Palmeiro's test scores or test results, so it wouldn't interfere with that. They're more concerned with the character of the game, and that scares me because Mark McGwire saved the game,
mm-hmm.
And it's basically, I think, it's eventually going to come out that really he probably did it too. And my question is. Is this, in the future, going to stop these people from getting in the hall? And if it doesn't, then why do we have these rules at all for any sport? Because mm-hmm. It's not right that in football there are certain punishments that are almost immediate and are catastrophic to a team. If Priest Holmes, for Kansas City example, was to be tested positive for steroids and they pulled him out of two games, you can almost put on two L's. It's the same thing for NBA, NHL. It seems like every major sport takes drugs and steroid abuse or anything that would be construed as cheating so seriously that most athletes are scared to try it, whereas baseball has a lackadaisical attitude to it.
I would have to say that is almost entirely your and many other people's perception, and perception only. I think that certainly, you know, if Priest Holmes, and I'm not a football expert, but 2 out of 16 games is 1/8. Okay, and so what you're saying is maybe Palmeiro should have been suspended for 20 games. Of course, the caliber of player is not at issue here. If Priest Holmes is important to his team so much that if he misses a game, they lose, that's their problem. That's not really the league's issue.
Right.
And but I do think that there are a lot of steroid problems in football that simply football has done a better job in terms of public relations in dealing with. Baseball has done a hideous job in doing it, and a lot of that, I believe, falls at the feet of the Major League Baseball Players Association. Certainly, Major League Baseball has wanted to do something about this many more years before they became able to in the past few, because the union was so powerful they could oppose successfully mandatory testing. But I think that your perception of, you know, Major League Baseball sitting on this for the Hall of Fame inductions and whatnot, I think a lot of that is conjecture. And I think what we need to do is we need to restrict ourselves to what is known and identify what is not known, because otherwise it's very difficult to separate the two. And I think that everyone involved deserves to have that distinction made.
And just one more thing, David, I think the NHL, the National Hockey League, which of course didn't play last year, I don't think they have a steroids policy at all.
Well, I guess my problem is that Major League Baseball is supposed to be America's sport. This is supposed to be what we stand behind and what is supposed to be a symbol of Americana throughout the world. You're right, I really don't know about NHL. Maybe it doesn't have a steroid policy, but it just seems like these other teams seem to take it a little bit more, or other leagues mm-hmm. seem to take it a little more.
Certainly amateur sports or supposedly amateur sports like track and field and that sort of thing take it very seriously.
And I'll tell you one other thing, and I appreciate the sentiment toward baseball being a symbol of America, but you know what I think is more a symbol of America throughout the world? Our justice system. And I think when those two things collide, our justice system and baseball, it makes for a pretty messy situation. But I think
what scares me about that is that if we go as far as justice system and this takes forever and a day to find out, are we going to have people Are we going to have Mark McGwire in the Hall of Fame only to be pulled 2 years later because finally the litigation has gone through and it comes to find out this did happen?
But he won't be pulled.
Palmeiro lied blatantly to Congress.
We don't know that. The timing of this doesn't make that you can come to that conclusion. You could certainly ask the question. I think Congress is going to ask the question. But he testified to Congress in March. He was tested positive in May. Maybe that was the first time he ever did steroids.
And also, honesty is not a prerequisite to make the Hall of Fame. And not cheating is not a prerequisite to making the Hall of Fame. Gaylord Perry is in the Hall of Fame. And everyone knew he was cheating his way to many of those 314 wins. That does not mean I condone it. But I think we need to be a little more pragmatic about how we administer our outrage so that we can find a system that works moving forward.
Okay, David, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
And we're talking with Alan Schwartz about today's return to baseball by Rafael Palmeiro after serving a 10-day suspension for steroids. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And, Alan, let me ask you a question. There was a proposal earlier this year after the congressional testimony by the commissioner, Bud Selig, saying, look, we know we just reopened the collective bargaining agreement to institute a drugs policy. Let's make it tougher. 50-game suspension for the first offense, 100 games for the second, life for the third. Where does that stand?
Well, I mean, that's just him pandering to Congress and trying to trying to curry favor with them. And who's to say that that's a bad strategy? What Commissioner Selig is doing by calling for these higher penalties when he has absolutely no power to impose them, okay, is basically laying all this at the feet of the Major League Baseball Players Association. And now, when everyone says, oh, that sounds like a wonderful, strong policy, let's do it, and the union is the one that says no, well, then they're the bad guys. They're the ones wearing the black hat and trying to explain why it's important for players to not have to, you know, pee into cups every 3 minutes. And, you know, we can all get into the civil liberty issues and whatnot, but what Commissioner Selig did, and many years too late, in my opinion, was illustrate unmistakably who is keeping stronger policies from being implemented, and that's the union, and that's for them to answer to.
Let's get another caller in. Zeke. Zeke calls us from Sioux City in Iowa.
Hey, how's it going?
Hi, fine.
I just called in. You know, I'm a college athlete. I play basketball at Briarcliff University here in Sioux City, and I know that as far as the steroids and, you know, drug policy goes, and you know, in just a small NAI league, that they have a zero tolerance policy. And, you know, and I look at those, you know, Palmeiro and, you know, all those guys are I'm supposed to be looking up to and striving to be like that. And, you know, and they get caught and they get to sit out, you know, 10 days. I just don't understand that, really.
I'll tell you the reason that there aren't you know, more lenient policies in college is because college athletes are not represented collectively by a union. Major League Baseball players are much more powerful to keep certain things from happening to them, some reasonable, some unreasonable, and we can argue that. But college athletes get railroaded, frankly, because they have no representation. Now, certainly, you know, you should look up to these players. I like to think you should. You know, but you can't look up to an entire class of people. I think you have to look up to specific people. And there are many players in baseball you should look up to. And I could name 50 of them right now. But some you shouldn't. And maybe Rafael Palmeiro is one that you shouldn't. And maybe Mark McGwire, I don't even want to cite any specific person. Maybe, you know, Jose Canseco, who has admitted things, and Ken Caminiti, who has admitted things, and Gaylord Perry, who has admitted things, are ones you should not. But that doesn't mean there aren't hundreds of others whom you should. And I think you have to be careful looking up to a class as opposed to a specific person.
Zeke, good luck with the season.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Appreciate the call.
Bye.
And Alan, before we leave, I do have to ask about the other suspension, which ended, somewhat more abruptly than we anticipated, and that was Kenny Rogers of the Texas Rangers, this involving not steroids, but physical attacks on members of the media, cameramen on the field who were doing their job filming Kenny Rogers, and he approached them and shoved them rather roughly. He was suspended for 20 games by Commissioner Selig. An arbitrator heard the case and reduced it to 13, apparently on technical grounds.
Well, I mean, the thing is, I think anyone who followed this case from the beginning and knows the history of how arbitration works in Major League Baseball knew that this was going to happen. I talked with union officials about this at the All-Star game, and everyone knew that once this went toward a neutral party, it was going to be reduced. This isn't the first time that Major League Baseball has, you know, announced a penalty and when it went towards a neutral party, a reasonably neutral party, it was reduced. I mean, it happens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so why are we surprised that this happened here? Commissioner Selig meted out his penalty, again, to curry favor among the public and among the press specifically, and that's fine. That's his job. And then, you know, I thought it was way too harsh in the first place. It was completely out of whack when it came to the history of these offenses. But then when it went to a neutral party, the neutral party said, that's too much, it should be less. This happens all the time. So I'm not sure why we're so shocked that it happened this time.
We have, there's the evidence on videotape. We see this happen. There's no question about whether he did it or not. I guess there's no question about the guy who threw the chair into the stands last year either. But to attack members of the media during their job, maybe 20 games is not so bad.
Well, no, but I just don't think, I think attacking a fan should be worse than attacking a member of the press. The press sometimes deserves it. I mean, I'm being a little glib here.
Let's hope so.
I think the one thing I would like to explore, we don't have time now, but perhaps some other time, no one seemed to ask the question, what would make a player want to do that? What would cause him, an otherwise pretty placid guy, to lose his cool like that? What is it about the press that would prompt such behavior to any degree? I think these are things that need to be explored before we just say, oh, we should be suspended for the rest of the season because he attacked a member of the press. Well, you know, it's not like he beat the guy to a pulp, for crying out loud. I mean, it was not that big of a deal, and yet everyone goes just completely bananas about it, generally people in the press. Well, you know what? We're not some grand protected class, and we shouldn't be. We should be treated a lot more normally, and the normal punishment for something like this was roughly like 10 games.
Alan Schwartz, as always, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Alan Schwartz, a senior writer for Baseball America and co-author of The Juice, The Real Story of Baseball's Drug Problems. It's Science Friday tomorrow. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.